So good evening, everyone. Welcome to yet another module of Discovering Buddhism. This is relating to the spiritual teacher. Tell me who's here for the first time? Oh, good. Did some of you do Buddhism in a nutshell? I know one of you did, a couple. Okay, good. Well, I'm really glad you're here with us tonight. And to all of you returning, I'm glad to see you back. So tonight we had two handouts. They're on the tables at the end of that pew, so please be sure to get one of each. This first sheet is an explanation of how you can access the reading materials and also what our class schedule will be. We're going to meet every Monday in June, and the last Monday will be our practice day. Right. That's June 29th. And so that day we will meet from 6:30 to 9:30. So you're going to have to plan to be here a little bit early and stay a little bit late. If you miss a class, you can make it up by streaming or the audio recordings that are posted after the teachings, after the classes. How to access all of that is explained on this sheet. I'm not going to go through it all, but if you have any questions, please come see me afterwards. I'll be glad to talk to you about it. And we usually have completion cards that you can fill out. It's a nice way of tracking your readings, your meditations, and as well as practice. And at the end of the class, if you're using completion cards, you can get Stephanie to sign it for you at the end of practice day. Then you collect all your completion cards from all of the modules, and you can get a completion certificate from FPMT. And we really encourage you to use those cards because it encourages you to do the work, and that's what's really going to help you. What else? I don't think I have anything else. This sheet gives you the password for the Online Learning Center, and that's where you'll find the reading materials. There are three texts: Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, which is in our bookstore; The Heart of the Path by Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and I think the reading list says read as much as you can. And there's also a book by Alex Berzin that's available as an e-book online, so you can download that or read it online.
Do you know the name? Do they know the name?
It's all on the sheet. All the information's on.
And that's not required
this sheet
to buy those books, but if you're in the if you're in the Discovering Buddhism river and you're going to stay in that river, then that book will be really helpful to have because there'll always be something that will be applicable one of the classes.
Yeah, and we use Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand for every one of the classes. So I think that's it.
That's it. Okay, so welcome to all of you, and especially if this is your first time or if you just came out of the nutshell, whatever way, welcome. Yeah. If you don't know, one of the reasons why I have this mic on and why we're going to be passing a mic around if anybody wishes to speak is because, see, there's a camera back there, and there are people actually who watch this from home. Some people have been sick, and they are home watching, or you may want to watch one. I try to just forget about it, but it does help me remember why we're using the mic, because people are actually watching. So, you know, stop me along the way or come up to me afterwards if you've got specific questions about what we talk about today, especially if you're kind of coming into this out of the blue. I'm happy to answer any questions that you've got. The way we usually start off is with a short meditation, and what you're going to be thinking about is your reason why you're here. You're going to be thinking about your intention for being here, and I mean, unless you came here to like heckle me, probably everybody's intention was pretty good. You know, even if you're just like, I have no idea, I just want to go see what they have to say, that's a good place to start, you know, curiosity. Maybe your intention is, you know, to learn a little bit more about Buddhism because ultimately you're trying to tame some of your negative thoughts and become a happier person or become a more generous person or more patient person, whatever your particular reason for coming here. And, it, you know, for all of us, we had to make some effort to get in the car and get here on a Monday night. So to congratulate yourself and then think about your intentions. So first get comfortable. If you're aware of the meditation position, then you can do this just in your own head. If you're not, the most important point is that your back is straight. So if you're in a chair, then try to have both of your feet flat on the ground in front of you so your legs aren't crossed, at least just for this little meditation. If you're sitting on the floor, you know, your legs are crossed in whatever position is comfortable. And then your arms are out away from your body so that your breathing can be deep and free and unconstricted. Your hands, you'd put your left hand right below your navel and your right hand on top of it, you know, so the back right in the palm of the other hand. Your thumbs are just gently touching together as though you're holding a piece of paper there lightly. And it makes an oval, which is, again, right around your navel. And you tuck your chin just a little bit, and that straightens your head, which is the top of that spinal column, that you don't want to break that line. You want to tuck your chin. Put your tongue gently at the back of your front teeth. And open your mouth just a little bit so that you're not clenching your teeth. Same thing with your eyes. You don't want them tight. You want to relax the muscles around your eyes. You can keep them a little bit open if that helps you keep alert. Or fully closed, whichever is easier for you. And then now we're going to place all of your attention and awareness on your breath. And we do this just so that we can shake off the day and let our mind kind of settle down. And as your thoughts arise, which they will, if you can see and be mindful that, oh, here comes a thought, it will just disappear under your awareness. Well, it may not completely disappear, but that's the point, is to just not follow it and just let it dissolve back as though it was a wave in the ocean and now it's settling back down as the ocean. And then another wave will come up and again you go, oh, here's another thought. And then if you can, you'll notice that the space between these thoughts becomes your resting space. And a method to help you in all of this is to tie your thoughts to the counting of your breath. So one inhale and one exhale is one. The next inhale, exhale is two. You can count to five, you can count to ten. If you lose your way, just go back to one. The point is not to be hard on yourself, it's to be aware of what's happening, building that muscle of mindfulness. So now I'll let you just meditate on that for about 5 minutes, just settling your mind into the count. Now bring your mind again to your intentions coming here tonight. I'm trying to stretch it a little bit. So imagine if you accomplish this that you've come here for, accomplish this wish or this goal, how it will benefit others around you. In ways that you might be able to anticipate, and in maybe some surprising ways. If you have more knowledge, more patience, whatever it is you're seeking. And so in that way we stretch and grow our intention to include others that we know and that we don't know as much as we possibly can. And then in this endeavor, we take refuge. So if you're Buddhist and you've taken refuge, then in your mind, refresh why you've taken refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. If you're not Buddhist, think about what helps you spiritually. What is it that you've taken refuge in? What shelters you? Spend a few minutes then thinking about your refuge. You can say the refuge prayer to yourself. The whole point is to join your mind with that intention, with that prayer. And then as you're ready, just open your eyes. Okay, so for those of you who've been taking DB, the last module was on karma, right? Which will come in handy when we're talking about the spiritual teacher. I think that's the official title of this module, is the spiritual teacher. Okay. Yes. So... how many people can see the board? See what I wrote on the board? Can everybody see it okay? Can everybody read it? If you can read this, all right, have you seen those bumper stickers? If you can read this, thank a teacher. Okay, that's it. We can go home. So if you can read this, thank a teacher. I think that is very, very profound, and it gets to a lot of what we're going to be talking about. So the fact that we can read this, you know, however old you are, go back chronologically to when you first began to learn how to read and write. And think about the people who were helping you and the words that you were learning. Because that, what they planted then, is with you right now. What they planted then was built on by the people and they got you here. And you're still carrying exactly what they put into your mind stream at that point. And it's with you. I still remember one of the very first words I ever learned to read was zoo, because it just looked so wild. And my favorite book was Mr. Mustard's Zoo. And I knew it by heart, but I couldn't read it. I mean, I could read it. I pretended I was reading, but I didn't know what any of those words meant. They were just squiggles. But then I did. Somebody did tell me, this is zoo. And that was my first and favorite word. So think about the first people teaching you to read and write. And why there was no question in our lives, because we're lucky enough, that somebody was going to teach you to read and write. There's just no doubt about it. That was what was going to happen. And, schools make sure that the teachers are qualified. And if they're not, hopefully they get pulled out. You get put with somebody else until you learn to read and write. There's just, you don't have to go around checking all their qualifications, because there's some other whole group of people checking their qualifications, and they're passing tests and they're being observed and on and on and on and on, so that you could learn how to read and write. There's a whole system in place that you could just lean on. And one thing led to another, and I remember Geshe-la talking about how his parents couldn't read and write. I mean, they grew up in a very, very poor part of northern India, and their job was to build roads. And so, you know, he said it was always interesting for him to look at it from this Buddhist perspective of when he brought his father here. Here he was, an older adult who had all the same things that we were looking at, but he said no imprints to read, no karmic imprints there in his mind stream. Nothing had been put in there for him to be able to read. So we can take the same exact logic then and look at the spiritual teacher. And we have to be very clear about why we want this. Why do we want a spiritual teacher? It has to make sense. That's the bottom thing, line that I come to. It has to make sense. It has to be practical. We have to be really smart about this part. And there's like 50,000 things I want to say at once. I'm just trying to slow down. So let's look first at the baggage that comes with this territory of the spiritual teacher, because you're going to see in the readings a lot of time it's called guru devotion. And even the word guru in our country, guru guitars, you know, I mean, guru yogurt, I mean, you name it, it's out there. So we've got a lot of ideas and kind of, like I said, baggage around guru devotion or devoting yourself to a spiritual teacher. When you think about some of that baggage, what is it? And or what is it that you want to make sure you learn in this class or that's covered? You know, questions that come up, and you know, it's not going to offend me to just throw it all out there. Believe me, I had a lot of problems with this topic in the very beginning, so I would love to hear what some of the baggage that you think comes with this term, guru devotion, or some of the things that you want to make sure we cover. Anything? Anybody? Yes. And you have a mic too? Okay.
So, just to be clear, are you asking about, like, what negative connotations might come up, or...?
Yeah, I mean, but baggage usually is, you know, the stuff we got to kind of sort through so we can actually move forward.
I mean, I don't know, like, when I think of spiritual teachers, I mean, one thing that there's kind of baggage there for me is manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, I want to not be manipulated.
Right.
And
right. Good one. How can we make sure? And so another way to say this, too, for our class is I want everybody to learn, how can we make sure that we're not being manipulated? How do we know? You know, because it's tricky. It's a tricky, tricky topic. What are some other... Sue?
I think exploitation. Is related to manipulation, but not really mm-hmm. the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
How do we determine what's a qualified teacher?
Mm-hmm. Or who, I should say. Anything else? Yeah.
Yeah. The word, I don't know, the two words together bring up just the word extreme to me.
Extreme?
And extreme anything scares the blanks out of me.
Yeah, it sounds rather extreme. And for good reason. I mean, we have a lot of stories, right? A lot of history. When you said two words, I thought you were going to say Kool-Aid, right? Jonestown, Kool-Aid, we got to say it. We got to talk about this stuff because, you know, the extreme negative side, the way that people are manipulated and exploited is because they don't have certain guidelines and certain frameworks about what to do. And, you know, I saw this great movie years and years ago about a cult. I mean, it was based on some true situation. There were many of them. And there was this guy, the mom hired the special guy to kind of de-brainwash her daughter, right? And so... she was just so frantic to find this guy who could do that. So she met him at the airport with all this money to pay him so that he would go and basically kidnap her daughter and unbrainwash her. And she gave him all this money, and he said, oh, that's not going to be enough. I need a whatever amount more. And she said, well, I have to mortgage my house. And he said, okay. And he was listing all these things, and then he said, hold on, hold on. You're now willing to mortgage your house and do this and do this and do this to get me that money because you want your daughter back. And he said, you're doing exactly what your daughter just did. He wasn't going to take her money. What he wanted to do was make a point, was that she was desperate. She was on the edge. She would do anything to save her daughter. And then he said, likewise, your daughter, for some reason, felt just as desperate that she would do anything to save herself, and she felt that this was the person who was going to save her. So she gave herself over to somebody who was not qualified, who exploited and manipulated her to the nth degree. So it's this tricky balance of there can be a positive way to feel that urgency, to feel that I need some help here, without the manipulation and exploitation. And that, to me, is the bottom line of this class, is where's that balance? What do we do? Yeah.
Are we basically talking about boundaries in that regard?
Yes. Yeah.
Because to experience some of the letting go that is a part of the teaching, you really do have to let go of boundaries to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the boundaries also keep us safe.
Right. We'll keep coming back to that because I would just reframe it in a different way. So when, you know, when we were learning to read, I don't know that we had to let go of our boundaries, but we had to trust that this teacher was going to teach us to read, and somebody in charge had to make sure that they were qualified and that they were skilled at teaching young children the alphabet and how to read and write. So you have to have, you know, some trust that this person knows what they're doing. And that's what we're going to be talking about a lot, is how do you know that you're in qualified hands? And the other thing is that you don't just find a qualified teacher and then close your eyes, you know, because what we're going to be talking about a lot of, there's kind of these two, when we talk about emptiness, there's these two things of either going overboard into thinking everything is exactly real like I see it, or nothing exists. And those are the two extremes, and you want to be in the middle. So same thing with finding a good teacher. One extreme is, I don't need anybody. I got this. The other extreme is, okay, I want to find somebody who can do that for me. And neither of those is correct. And you'll see people who are in both either camp, or you'll go in one camp or the other. I know I was very much in the, like, I got this camp. I don't need anything. I can read because people taught me to read, so I can do this. But there's lots of things that I can read that I needed a teacher for. And that's another thing to think about, not just who taught you to read, but where else did you need to go and find qualified teachers, because no matter how much you could read, it wasn't going to help you do X, Y, or Z. Like, my mother studied Spanish, and she passed all these tests, but she couldn't speak a single word because she wasn't with anybody who was speaking it. You know, so the knowledge was limited. So just keep thinking about these two extremes of, I don't need anybody, or I need somebody who can, and then just closing your eyes. They got it. That's not the point. The point is, and we're going to be talking about this in a minute, of the right way to rely on somebody. But I just don't want us to be afraid to name the elephant in the room. You know, if the elephant in the room has a name, it's Kool-Aid, all right? And we just keep coming back to that, so we understand that we don't want to fall off into that cliff, and we also don't want to fall into the cliff of not finding that instruction. So there is, you know, the good thing is that when you look at the path that we're walking on in Tibetan Buddhism, it's not filled with all the stories of Jones. That's more our experience in the West of mistakenly relying on people who have not been qualified. And I remember one teacher telling me, you know, even when I doubt my teacher, or when I ask a lot of questions, I have no problem doing that, because that's exactly what Buddha taught, was to question everything, not to just to say, okay, I'll do that because you've said to do it, but to question everything. And that ultimately what we're really finding and leaning on is our own inner teacher. So, you know, if you've been in these other classes before and you've heard all these teachers talk about how the yumminess of the chocolate cake is not coming just from the chocolate cake side, right? There's this relationship between you and the cake. And so before you eat that cake, I mean, that's why there's all the ingredients listed, right? You go into the store and you're like, okay, how much of this? So that you can check out to make sure that that's actually a cake that you want to eat or you're not allergic to or whatever. And then you also have to be the kind of person who doesn't have an allergy or have diabetes, whatever it is. There's both things going on. And that's what, again, we're coming back to in this class. Anything else that you want to add to there, just chime in.
I had something. Yeah. Do they have to be alive or in the same country?
Good question. Okay. Okay, do they have to be alive or in the same country? I'm just going to abbreviate these for now. I can answer the bottom one with certainty, which is no, they don't have to be in the same country. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that, kind of proximity to the teacher. And I'll ask Geshe-la for more help about the alive one. I know that so the teachings kind of progress and keep on going. So if you've taken, you know, if you had a relationship with a teacher who has now passed away, you would still hold that relationship very dear in your heart and still connect to that person. But especially when you're getting instructions, it's powerful to have somebody who is alive. But we'll come back to that. Okay? Yeah.
And one question. I was wondering if we'll go over how to start a dialogue once you find a qualified teacher. Is that part of it?
Sure, we can definitely do that. We can definitely do that. Yeah. And, you know, one thing I just kind of caution everybody as you're reading through the readings and as we meet and talk about this, you may feel this sudden, like, really superpower burning urgency. And I would just say, you know, that's okay, but everybody I've ever talked to said, you know, just kind of slow down and take your time. What we're talking about now is, you know, what are the benefits and how to get your head around some of this. And that, you know, everybody, you listen to His Holiness talking about how take 13 years. Because in the meantime, there's different levels of teachers, and we're going to talk about that today. So there's different kinds of instructors and teachers. You can still learn a huge amount, and there's certain place that you've got to ready your head and your mind anyway. It's you weren't taught to read and write when you were an infant, and you weren't taught chemistry in first grade. All of these things for a reason. And so it doesn't mean that the learning doesn't start before you meet that teacher. Okay? Okay, so I covered a lot more than I thought. But okay, here's a really good point too. When we talk about connecting with a spiritual teacher or guru, devotion, whatever you want to call it, it is a practice. It's not something that you just sign on the line and then somebody else does something for you, like I've been saying. It's a practice. And I know that when I say Geshe-la, some of you may not realize that Geshe Gelug is the teacher for the Kanapa Center. He's a Buddhist monk. He's been a monk since he was 7 years old. And he's here on Sundays and Wednesdays for sure if you'd like to meet him and listen to his teaching. And what was I going to say? Oh, he talks about how, you know, in the Lam Rim or in the paths to enlightenment, connecting with the spiritual teacher is the very first step, and it's the first thing that's covered. But it's also one of the hardest and most difficult topics. And so it's kind of the first, but it's also the last. So he said, you know, it is really a practice. You know the practice of thinking of all sentient beings as our mothers? That is really difficult, right? Well, that's a whole lot easier than this one. A whole lot easier. Although we don't have that concept. We think, no, I find a teacher and then I can just kind of like, okay, help me. It's really about how you view this person. And if you've been studying karma, and we'll talk about this during our module as well, it's very much connected to karma and the karmic imprints you're creating by creating that view. So if you walk around and you're practicing seeing all beings as your mother, first of all, that's awesome. Try that. Try it for a day. See how hard it is. But that'll give you a little bit of a taste of how this is also a very challenging and difficult practice. And we'll talk about why and what you can do to get there. But it's not like, you know, going to college and looking for, I mean, it's similar, but it's not as easy as going to college and finding a good teacher and then you just go to the class, take some notes, and get your degree. It's not that easy. So it is this practice of how to see and how to view. And that's why you want to make sure that there's something that's a solid base. So if you've been studying karma and you've studied emptiness, something has to have a solid base in order to hold that label of qualified teacher. And we're going to go over what those qualifications are. So this cup holds the label of cup because it has all the qualifications of cup and it functions as a cup. It does not hold the label of plate. It just doesn't. It's a base for a label. And so in finding a qualified teacher, you have to find a solid base that will be able to hold all the qualities that we're going to talk about. And that's why you have to be so careful and check and check and recheck. So one person, and this gets a little to what Sue was asking about, that at least in my mind is a very easy person to hold that base and allow me to kind of practice and tiptoe into, that is the Dalai Lama. Because he's not, you know, down the block from me. Not so close that I'm seeing any of his negative traits that would kind of mess up my mind. To me, he's a perfectly qualified, he has all the qualifications we're going to talk about. And it's a way then for me to practice that view that we're talking about, of developing that view that somebody holds those qualities. And when I'm able to see that, then something changes for me. He's not aware that I'm doing that, so nothing's changing for him. It's all about what's helping your mind. And what I always go back to in Buddhism over and over and over again is, if the teaching is meant to be beneficial and liberating, if it's not doing that, then either you're not thinking about it correctly, or somebody's not saying something correctly. You know, like I make tons of mistakes when I talk about DV, hopefully not too many. But if I ever have a question, then I just go back and ask Geshe-la. But my point is that everything is meant to be beneficial and liberating. And if there's something that's like when I would study about certain topics, it would kind of scare me, then I would know that I was looking at it incorrectly. I need to go back and review it. So same thing with this. Exact same thing with this. So what do we need first from our side? I'm going to talk just a little bit about that right now. Some of the things that we need are, and if you've been studying Buddhism or in this module, then these will sound very familiar. So recognition of our own suffering. So now why, for those of you who are here for the first time, like, why would that be important? You may have heard, you know, that in Buddhism, the Four Noble Truths. And if you haven't, if that's a brand new term to you, then come and talk to me later. But it's basically just in a nutshell, and anybody else chime in who's been in that nutshell, it's, you know, recognizing where you are and why you want to get out. So like a prisoner doesn't have any problem recognizing the fact that they would like to get out of prison, right? There's just reminders day in and day out about how restrictive and how awful that situation is. Sometimes we don't see that for ourselves because we live in this nice little country and everything seems relatively okay. So understanding that actually the happiness that we find here is not reliable. That's recognizing our own suffering. Recognizing that the happiness that we're looking for, there's no solid place for that to rest. It's just constantly shifting. So that's one of the prerequisites. Another is then renunciation of suffering, that we're trying to renounce the things that bring us suffering. And my favorite definition of renunciation is, renunciation doesn't mean going away from the world, it means knowing that the world goes away. So if you know that things are impermanent and that the world goes away, then you relate to them very differently. Doesn't mean you deny yourself. Doesn't mean you don't engage with it. It means that you engage with it in a very different way. I think a more generous way, a more genuine way, you know, less clinging to it. And then another prerequisite would be refuge in what we call the three jewels. So again, we're talking about, in this section, Buddhist spiritual teachers, and of course this applies to other religions similarly, but here to have a relationship with a spiritual teacher requires refuge. You're taking refuge, and you've had that module already, I think. So the refuge is considered like the gateway to the rest of the teachings. You know, it's where you have found sanctuary. And then the knowledge of what to practice and what to avoid. And then having the beginnings, the stirrings of bodhicitta. You know, so you have that wish to have the most altruistic kind of love and generosity in your heart. To have those kind of stirrings. Those are the things that are really required on your side. And there's so then I'll just read this sentence that comes after that. And then when one enters into a relationship with a spiritual teacher and comes under his or her guidance, these understandings, the ones I just read, and realizations on the path are developed further. So it's like you're not starting from scratch. You know, you have these things as solid building blocks already in your life. That makes sense? And then we're going to talk in a minute about the qualifications of a teacher, but I like something, this helped me a lot when I was first studying this topic, because I'm a really stubborn person, and everything has to make like crystal clear sense to me and be extremely practical, because I'm not just going to go there, you know. So this is something that really helps. If you're one of those people, this might help you too. These are called the four reliances. And so first you have to understand why you would rely on a teacher and not just yourself. Remember I was saying before that there's those two kind of camps. One is like, I got this, and the other camp is like, you get it, you do it. So this is more for the camp, you know, like, I got this. First you have to like realize that what is it? It's the first step in AA, right? You're not that powerful. You can't do it all alone. That was a huge turning point for me. It's like, oh, I can't do this all alone. Wow. I get from all of your faces, it's like, who would think that? Well, there are some of us out there, so that was a big problem for me. Okay, so then after you really figure out, okay, I need to rely on other people, then the first reliance is rely on the message of the teacher and not the teacher's personality. And that is a hard one for a lot of people. Rely on the teacher's message, not his or her personality. Because we find that there are some very charismatic teachers out there, but you have to really make sure that the message is one that you're leaning on, not this person's personality. That personality, because what will happen then is that personality shifts, or you see something you don't like, then everything else falls apart. It's a house of cards and just comes tumbling down. So you have to make sure that what you're relying on is the message. And then, the second one builds from there, that you're relying on the meaning of the message and not just on the words. Because sometimes I know I can just, I've memorized something and I'm just kind of not even thinking about it anymore. So you're relying on the message, the meaning of the words, and not just on the words. And the next one is you rely on the real meaning and not the provisional one. And there's a couple different definitions of what this means. One is that there's two different kinds of sutras or texts. One is very explicit, very clear to understand, and one is one that's not as explicit. And so that's one view of what that means. Rely on the ones that are clear and easy to understand, and don't need a lot of interpretation. Rely on the real meaning, not one that you've got to kind of go off onto these tangents for and might get lost. And then the last one, and the one that's considered the most important, is rely on your wisdom mind and not your ordinary judgmental mind. And so hopefully, you know, our wisdom mind just will increase and increase. And that's what we're relying on, not just, you know, what we're, our mind that can kind of run wild with us. And at first, more important than finding a teacher is finding and following the wisdom truth of the teachings. So, and that, we are so fortunate. You know, we have that. We have that. We have somebody here who's explaining it all to us. So that's the most important thing to be able to find. And then, you know, as Geshe has said to me many times, you know, what you're really trying to find ultimately is your own inner teacher. And that's that wisdom mind. I mean, that's where this is going. All right, then let's talk a little bit about the kinds of teachers there are, because that can be a little confusing to people sometimes. I would use here like tea with a small T. You're like, okay, there's professors in colleges, professors of Buddhism. So these all kind of fall under an umbrella of people who are sharing Dharma knowledge. And, you know, what's the difference between them? Some of it, again, is the difference in the way you're seeing them. But they also have different qualifications, and that's what's most important. So when I was, getting a little sidetracked here, but it'll make sense ultimately. So when I was in third grade, I had been going to school in, for 2 years, I'd been in school in Madison, Wisconsin. And then we went back to where I'm from, which is New Orleans, and I got plunked down to this elementary school, and oh man, I was looking around the school and I see all these kids writing cursive and up on the board, and I'm thinking, ooh, I don't know how to write that, because in Madison they teach you that in third grade. In New Orleans, it turns out, they teach you to write that in second grade. So I told the teacher, you know, I don't know how to write that, and she said, well, this is her first year, so her qualifications were on the skimpy side. I find out later. She said, well, you're going to have to learn that at home because I don't teach babies. So I thought, okay. So my mom worked, and she said, you're going to have to get your brother to teach. So my brother's 3 years older than me. I remember his story for writing an F, okay? He said, this was my level teacher. It's gonna make sense in a minute. He says to me, okay, so I was having a lot of trouble with F. I got all the other letters down. He goes, okay, so, and this is the only one I think he taught me, because the rest he just gave me the book as a here. He goes, okay, a little boy comes home from school. He goes upstairs and looks for his mom, and she's not there. And she goes down to the basement, and his mom's not there. He comes back to the front door, and she's not there. So he goes outside. I still remember that. But the rest was not so clear. And so I still print everything, because my handwriting is atrocious. So that's what I'm saying. Whatever gets put in that stream, what you're taught follows all the way down. I didn't have all those drills. You know, I looked at workbooks later and they have all these drills and how to hold a pencil. And I didn't have any of that. It was just like I was trying to figure out how to read it. I'd look up at the board, you know, what is that letter? So my level teacher for writing cursive was pretty weak. So here's some of the different kinds of teachers. They say levels of spiritual teachers, and I would say, you know, Dharma instructors. Professor of Buddhism. So certainly this is a very important person, right? They're keeping the teachings alive in a certain respect. How many of you have heard Robert Thurman talk? You know, amazing, right? Amazing. He was also a monk at one time. This man has a huge amount of knowledge, right? Huge amount of knowledge. But, you know, his qualifications might be different than what we're going to talk about later about the qualifications of a spiritual teacher. But it's really very important to know that that's somebody who is sharing with us the wisdom teachings. So there's what they call dark. I don't know if I fall into that camp, but it's whoever sits up here and chats with me sometimes. I've got a certificate FPMT sent me because I went through took all these tests. So it's somebody like me who is just like, you know, a couple feet ahead on the DB path, you know. Same with Joanna. Joanna's been at the center since it began. So, I mean, there's people who have a lot of knowledge and who are really willing to share. When I first came to the center, we were in a basement with like a handful of people, and there were no classes. And I remember just going up to somebody who was older than me, who'd been around. I say, how do you do a prostration? And he showed me. And I'll always be grateful because that planted a seed, and now I've done many, many prostrations based on what he taught me, right? That was the beginning. So there's those people who are a few steps ahead of us, who can be hugely important, like the story I'm telling you. I mean, without some of those people at that center who taught me some of the basics, I probably would not have continued on. And then another is like meditation teachers or ritual teachers, kind of same category. that I'm talking about, but they might have a little bit more expertise in something. And all of these, well, I guess part of my point is that just because you go to these things and ask questions and listen respectfully and participate, that doesn't mean that that's not in the same camp as a spiritual teacher that has the qualifications we're talking about. Just like my brother, he was qualified to teach me how to write the letter F. But he was not a qualified elementary school teacher. So that's kind of, he's like me. All right, then there's spiritual mentors, which now we're kind of getting into this category. This definition says, your spiritual mentor is the most important person of all of these levels because of the depth and power of this relationship. So you've picked them. Okay, you've chosen them. And with each of the four subdivisions, because now I'm going to give you subdivisions of spiritual mentors, the connection gets even deeper and more powerful as well. This doesn't mean that the previous levels weren't important, but it's a different kind of connection and a different kind of qualification. So the first one is whoever, if you're Buddhist and you're taking refuge, the person who gives you refuge and who perhaps you take some vows with. So tomorrow is Sakadawa. Some people are taking some vows in the morning. Some people are taking refuge with Geshe-la. Then he is in that level. If you take refuge with somebody, that is your, you've checked out to make sure that they're qualified. You have a special relationship with somebody who gave you refuge. And then another category is the Mahayana masters. So we're in a, this is a long, complicated to describe what Mahayana is, but basically that's the umbrella that we're under. And somebody who you feel is a Mahayana master for you should have all the qualifications that you would expect of a refuge preceptor to possess. And you'll receive teachings from them on the great vehicle. So, you know, like, it doesn't mean that you have this, you see this person all the time. So I went to India with Geshe-la years ago. I went to his monastery and I met his teacher and I received certain teachings from him. I didn't take refuge with him because I'd already taken refuge. He would fall under this camp, this Mahayana master. He was giving teachings. You know, I felt incredibly lucky. He's now the abbot of the whole monastery. Super qualified person, right? So it falls into that camp. Similar, like a more mundane level, you know, you're now in a master's program or in law school or med school or whatever it is, and now, you know, you're in whatever, some highfalutin grad school, and you've checked out, you get the chance to pick out who's going to be your advisor, right? Or who's going to be your main professor. You're going to have lots of professors, but you have one who's your main professor. Same thing. You wouldn't just, I mean, I know people who went to specifically to a specific school because that was going to be their advisor for their doctoral program. It's like that, except bigger. Because we're not talking about just your job. We're not talking about just your degree. We're now talking about the much bigger picture. Okay, we're talking about trying to reach enlightenment. We're talking about trying to have realizations and to completely change and transform your mind. We're talking about who's going to help you do that. So it doesn't mean that everybody's going to do that, but or want that. But you have to kind of build up for yourself, why would I go to that level? Maybe you're not going to go to that level. This is not pushing anybody. This is just describing what these different things are. It's fine to be gathering all kinds of information and learning from the wisdom teachings. That alone will have a powerful effect on your mind. And then you may generate the wish to, like, okay, I want to go this next level. And then you may take years and years and years to see what the qualifications are. Just like somebody going through a graduate program. Okay, and then tantric masters, that's a whole other section. This person has to have all kinds of other qualifications. And also have to decide that you have all kinds of qualifications in order to become that kind of a student. And then the final category under this mentor, the spiritual mentor that we're talking about, is what's called the root guru. And it's the person who is the most, he's the one who most transforms your mind and your heart, who most moves you, who most touches and moves your heart. And it shouldn't be just this, like falling in love where you're like, oh, and then maybe next year, like, not, I don't know. That same kind of like, what am I trying to say? Sometimes people get really swept up in something. This person is so amazing, and they make this leap to thinking that this is their root guru. And there's dangers that we've listed, but there's other dangers just in terms of then trying to break that. You then later next year you go, oh, I don't really know that was my root guru. Now, you know, you're the one who took that step to say that was your root teacher. Now you're trying to back away from that, and that's going to cause problems in the strength of your connection. And that's what we're talking about, not that there's not anything other than that. The way that I kind of like to look at it is, again, if you just come from the class on karma, then this will make more sense. And if you try to remember that we're talking about more than just this lifetime. So if we remember that our consciousness is that river, a huge, endless river, no beginning and no end. And what we put into the river last couple of lives is now come downstream into this life. And if I'm going to, like, put a whole bunch of garbage in the river right now, that's what's going to go downstream. So I want to make sure that everything I'm putting into this river is positive. And if I've generated this wish in my mind to develop bodhicitta and to become enlightened, then I want to take care of that wish, because that's an amazing thing to even have a minute of that kind of a wish, right? Same thing then with connecting with other people, with everybody, but also the person who is trying to lead me towards that ocean. If I make a mess of that kind of relationship, it's just not, it's putting garbage in that river. So I want to be really careful with that. Any questions so far? I'm tired of talking, so anybody who has a question, I'm... We're soliciting. Yeah, he's got a question.
Hold the mic.
I've mentioned it in other classes here. I'm a 12-step dude, and it sounds to me so far, it's kind of, I mean, not as deep, but kind of like, you know, I have friends I talk to at meetings, I have a network of people, but then I got a sponsor, and that's the guy who I go to no matter what.
Right.
Like when the blank hits the fan, or just to see things differently. And I'm not saying that's what this is, but mm-hmm. that's what it sounds like. That's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, I think that's a great analogy. Because you were very careful when you picked your sponsor,
oh, yeah.
Right?
And a lot of times it doesn't work out, and you have to go see another guy. And,
right. Yeah. Right. And so were there certain, I mean, are there just individual reasons for picking a sponsor, or are there kind of lists?
Well, usually, because I'm from New York and I could be a little hyper, so I like calm guys. Calm people.
Okay.
I look for peaceful people.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to aspire to.
And when somebody decides, I mean, how do they know when somebody's ready to be a sponsor?
They have to have certain, I mean, they make suggestions, like you should have done steps.
Right.
You should have at least a gear clean, you know.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, there are.
There's a list, yeah.
There's a list of stuff, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think it's very similar. I think there's a lot of things, you know, that we can look at that help us understand that there's qualifications, and that we just take for granted that there's these qualifications, you know, like in schools or anything that you've studied anywhere, almost anywhere, there's some kind of licensure and accreditation. There's something, and then we get to this realm, and people just kind of throw everything to the wind and go, "Oh, that person is amazing," and that's why it's don't rely on their personality. We're relying on meaning, the teachings, all of these things. And I remember when I first came, I would get really confused, like, well, why do I have to do it that way? Why can't I just kind of change some of this around and do it my way? Because it's more fun to do this like this. And then I really got it when I started thinking about how, like, if I was lost in the woods and going through a jungle, I could probably take a machete and try to find a way through. Or I could try one of those paths, you know, and I could talk to people about which path was easier and fits my personality, and it's just like that. So if I've seen that people have walked down pathways and they've gotten to a certain place, then to me that's the same thing like with finding a sponsor, you know, and what fits your personality. And, you know, hearing some of the things that Geshe had been through in his life, and, you know, he'd been, you know, a little troublemaker at the monastery when he was a kid, and then things really kind of changed his mind, and he worked on all these things. Hearing some of those things from him really helped me to see how these teachings changed his mind. Because I'm not about blind faith. I can't go there. It's not in my DNA. It's got to make sense to me. And hearing how transformative the teachings were for somebody similar to me, and then, you know, watching it and checking it out, just intrigued me. And so then I just kept taking another step and another step. So, you know, the other thing is that I remember hearing Geshe-la say, I think it's a proverb of some kind, but, you know, you can receive teachings from the bird of a mouth of a bird. You can receive teachings from the mouth of a bird, and you should all day long. You know, our enemies are our teachers, our neighbors are our teacher, our coworkers are our teacher. And I remember arguing with Geshe-la in the beginning when I was studying this, like, I don't understand why don't I see my neighbor across the street in this way? You know, as just like what you're describing, seeing the teacher. And he said, eventually, that's what you should be able to do. That's the point. It's not just to be able to see one person like that. The point is to be able to see everybody like that, because it's a tall order. So you start with the person who has those qualifications, who it will be easiest to see. You know, why would you do that with somebody? Why would you try to see that those qualities in somebody who is not practicing them? But ultimately, if you can see beings in a more positive way, then yes, your mind is going to follow your thoughts. So first we pick somebody who's very easy to see it that way. That's why, the Dalai Lama, it's easy for me when I hear him, when I listen to him, when I go to teachings, to see him in a certain way. And that's like a little template for me to move a little bit forward in this practice. I realize I'm covering a lot today, and we will go back and review some of these things. When the first article, it's in your required reading, you'll see the same thing that I'm about to read to you, so don't worry about taking notes, it's there. It's the qualifications of a spiritual teacher. Okay, so just like in AA, you know, the year of sobriety, it's like a couple of lifetimes of sobriety. Spiritual sobriety. Okay, so rely on a spiritual guide who is subdued, pacified, most pacified. We'll talk about what all those mean in a minute. Who has more qualifications than you, more qualities than you. Okay? Who has perseverance, a wealth of scripture, realizations into suchness, who is a skilled teacher, who has love, and who has given up disappointment in the disciples' performance. And then, so what do these things mean? I think this will say it in your article as well. Subdued means that the person's mind has been subdued with the practice of ethics. So that's one of the most important things, is that the teacher practices morality. You know, hyper-morality. They're like super-morality man or woman. That's one of the most important things. And that's, you know, that takes a long time to check out. That he or she is an ethical person who embodies the practice of morality in his or her actions and choices. This means that one's ethics are more than their mere words. And pacified. You said the person should be pacified. What does pacified mean? If the mind is also pacified with single-pointed concentration, this means having some control and ability to focus and concentrate the mind. So in the meditation module, you know, we talk about single-pointed concentration is a high achievement in meditation practice. It's not, you know, being able to just sit for 10 minutes and meditate. Having single-pointed concentration, which pacifies the mind. And what they qualify this being by saying having some control and ability to focus and concentrate the mind. Then most pacified, having been most pacified, refers to having a mind pacified by an understanding of wisdom, most specifically the wisdom of emptiness. And if that's a new term for you, then, I mean, we can talk about that later, but that's exactly what they're studying in the monastery and all the debates. And if you've seen any of heard Geshe-la talk at all about emptiness, you'll know that he is the smartest person I know talking about emptiness. And then having more qualities in you. This seems rather obvious, but there is one very nice example in the text in Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand. It's kind of long. I'm not going to read it to you. But you can check it out and see. And then realization into suchness, which refers again to the wisdom of emptiness, specifically the accurate view of reality. So some realization into emptiness. These are the qualifications that a teacher needs in order for you to rely on them as a spiritual master. And that's why it's not something that just happens overnight and not something you just turn around and find. We're so fortunate that, you know, we have Geshe-la here who has studied all the years in the monastery. He's a perfectly qualified teacher to be giving us the teachings in whatever way we're receiving them. So for the longest time he said, look, I'm your Dharma friend. I will make sure that you have the best information. I'll teach you everything that I know. And that's huge. That's huge.
A couple times you've referred to things like having
as an example, you just referred to emptiness.
Uh-huh.
And then you went on. You referred to refuge earlier, and then you went on.
Yeah.
I'm new enough that if you don't stop for a second and at least elaborate,
mm-hmm.
then it's a word. It's mm-hmm. not a meaning.
All right.
So if you could elaborate some, as opposed to making the assumption that we understand. And of course, as you said, there's certain topics that take weeks and weeks to go over just in a class, so you can't go to that depth.
Right. Right. So refuge, I thought I'd give a little bit, but now I'll try to do a little bit more on emptiness. So refuge is pretty much what it sounds like. It's where you go to feel safe. And, you know, all of us, whether we've taken refuge in Buddhism or not, find things that we take refuge in. Maybe our insurance plan. Something that we're kind of leaning on and relying on in this world of uncertainty. You know, I'm being kind of facetious about my insurance plan, but seriously, if we're not talking about spiritualism, we do take refuge in certain things. We are counting on that 401k plan. We are making certain plans that we feel like, okay, I can rest there because I got all that set up. But then when you look at your spiritual life, a lot of people aren't sure exactly where they've taken refuge. And when we mention refuge here, like I said, it's the pathway into the teaching. It's considered the gateway into the teachings of, in Buddhism, it means the first step into all of that is you've after looked at and decided this is where I want to go, is saying, this is what I actually take refuge in. I'm sorry, this is kind of going in and out. But what I'm relying on, what I'm putting my, where I'm finding comfort, where's my safe haven, is in the teachings of the Buddha, in the fact that the Buddha lived and taught these things, and the other people who are carrying these teachings forward. That's where I'm going to put my heart and soul. So if you've seen the movie Touching the Void, this guy falls off this mountain, breaks his leg, and then he has to climb all the way down on his hands and knees for days and days to get back to this camp. It's an amazing movie. I took Geshe-la to see it. And it's amazing the guy didn't die. And Geshe-la, the guy said, I wanted to get back to this camp because I didn't want to die alone. And he said, that's where he took refuge. That's what refuge means. Like, he put all of his hope and wish on, like, I just want to get back and not die alone. And that's what got him through. So when we take refuge in Buddhism, it's the same thing. It's like, that's what's going to get me through. Not just get me through, get me all the way to enlightenment. So if you've studied at all what enlightenment means and you have any desire to get there, then how are you going to get there? You start to realize that first step in the 12 steps, which is, I can't do this all by myself. So refuge is, okay, this is how I can get there. This is the boat that's going to get me there. This boat of the Buddha, the Dharma, which is the teachings of the Buddha, and the other people who have these kind of qualities that I just mentioned. Emptiness, maybe a better word to use right now is the wisdom the wisdom that sees the way things exist. And just really, really in a nutshell, when we say emptiness, it's not that things don't have any thing. They are empty of having the solid appearance that we give them. So things exist, but not the way that we think they might exist. And emptiness is just this word. It sounds too nihilistic, so it doesn't really fit the Tibetan word for emptiness. But when I say emptiness right now in these things I'm reading, it's a person who has been able to see the way that things actually exist more than I or most of us are seeing them. That they're realizing that things do not have the kind of permanent, solid existence that we tend to relate to things the way they do. And it's a huge topic. But the way that I'm talking about it now, and when I refer to somebody, it's somebody who's really studied that. So like Geshe at the monastery would have been studied this for, to get a Geshe degree, because Geshe just, it's a degree that somebody earns. And it takes like 20-something years. And it's, a lot of it's about studying about the nature of reality, which is what emptiness is. Emptiness is the nature of reality, debating it, taking tests, going to the next level. And then there's different levels of Geshe degrees, just like there's different levels of spiritual teachers. And Geshe-la has the highest level of that Geshe degree. So yeah, just jump in if I say things that, you know, I'll try to do a kind of condensed version, and then also afterwards I can give you more information about where you can get more, because some people might know a lot more and some people haven't heard those terms, so just keep reminding me. Okay, and when you reread, when you read the article, you'll see what I just read. So, and hopefully they have the same definitions that I just went through. But I wanted at least today to just kind of throw out a lot of different things about what we're going to be covering. The qualifications of a teacher. The qualifications from your side. You know, when would I know that that was something that I wanted to do? The other thing I would say is, you know, for me, just relying on everything that I'm able to see and hear, and in that kind of with that kind of same reverence, like the fact that I can read these books, the fact that there's somebody there to show me those books, the fact that I'm, you know, there's a place that has a stupa outside that I can walk around. To me, that's all practice and helping develop that. The qualities that I need to engage with the things that are going to pull me forward, if that makes sense. If you've been studying karma in the last module, did anybody talk about like the karma to see what you see around you? And you know that. So we have the karma to be able to. So we don't maybe have. I don't want to open up a whole can of worms, but. We have the good luck. We have those seeds that I was saying in our mind stream that have created the causes for us to be able to see these images of the Buddha all around this room. That's amazing, because if we were a cat in this room, we might not recognize that that's, you know, a Buddha on the wall. We might not know what we're seeing, right? So we have this ability. And part of, for example, seeing the Dalai Lama as somebody who has all of these qualities, plant something in my mind stream to be able to continue that and to see that further and further. Just like learning to write F got me to being able to write friend. Just like somebody teaching me to read zoo got me to be able to read all the things that I read today. So being able to see the Dalai Lama as having all these qualities and generating that kind of devotion and love for him in my heart will have an effect. So when I first came into the center, again, when we were in this basement, there was this picture of the Dalai Lama and then this bowl where there were like dollar bills. And I remember thinking, what in the world? I just thought that was so weird. It's like, he's not going to reach out and take that money. Why are people putting dollar bills in this bowl in front of the Dalai Lama? And then somebody explained to me, well, that's really about creating a connection. So it depends on what kind of feeling you have when you put that money. So like I think Mother Teresa says, it doesn't matter how much money you give. What matters is the feeling, how much you give with it. So then it made a little more sense. It's like this person was explaining to me, you know, you might not have the good fortune to meet the Dalai Lama and, you know, go have dinner and talk with him, right? You don't have that kind of connection. But if you put something that you value in this bowl, you have now created this karmic connection with this person. And that's how karma works. You know, you've now connected. You have the good karma to be able to see this picture. You know, just like some people, they walk into a church and instantly tears come to their eyes, right? You just feel so holy in there. Other people walk into a Buddhist temple, same thing. They just feel something. People meet Mother Teresa and just, that's not coming from nothing. It's not coming from Zippo. So that's the whole reason for this kind of a practice as well. And it doesn't mean that we're not doing devotional things until we have this person in our life. Does that make sense? And that's, I guess, the whole thing that I'm trying to say is we're still generating that incredible connection with our own reverent attitude. And we develop that by, again, that quality of, the first thing that I mentioned of the qualities of a student, having some understanding of our own suffering. So if I had some rare disease and I'm aware that I have this rare disease, and then there's a couple people on the planet who found a cure for that disease, you know, I would do anything to get there and find that person who could cure me. And I would give them anything. So we want to make sure, though, that they're qualified to give me something that's actually going to cure me, and I'm not going to be in, you know, doing something weird for them the rest of my life, right? But let's just say we know that this is an Albert Schweitzer, right? This huge, good-hearted person who's created this cure for my disease. Then again, I would do anything. I'd be so grateful that this person existed and found the cure. So, do you get the analogy? It's like that. It's like understanding what we are riddled with that we're trying to move beyond, and generating the understanding. And this has to come from your side of really exploring: is this my medicine? So for people who've taken refuge, they've felt like, this is my medicine. This is what's going to cure me. This is what's going to train and tame my mind. Okay, so I want this medicine. And then you develop this kind of reverence, and you develop a relationship with the medicine. And then it just progresses from there. Then you find people who are already cured, and then you find people who can teach you more about moving there. And on it goes. Yeah.
What's the name of that article?
Which article?
The one you quoted from.
That's the first article in the required reading that you'll see on the DB. I don't have the title in front of me, but it's number one.
Practicing Guru Devotion.
Yes, I believe so. I think it's, what did you say?
Practicing Guru Devotion.
Yes.
By Lama
Zopa. That's it. Yeah. Where is it listed?
It is, the listing of the reading is on the online learning center at FPMT, and that information sheet tells you how to access that online center.
So I would say homework for this week is try walking around thinking of all beings as your mother. Try that practice off and on this week as much as you can. You know, it's really difficult. So give it a try. It'll be beneficial whenever you can do that. Watch your mind and see how it changes when you're trying that practice on. Does that make, you know, anybody have any questions about what I mean? So, you know, you're in the grocery store. Some people it's really easy to see as your mom, right? The older woman is having trouble getting something. Oh my goodness, I would just, I'll get her anything, you know, take all the groceries to the car. And then there's the people it's not so easy to see as your mom. And doesn't even look like anybody who would be your mom, you know, some maybe skinny guy who's doing something obnoxious. And you know, and you take that moment to think of this was in one life your mother. And the whole reason is, you know, the way that you feel differently about somebody that you care so much about, and the way that you will overlook things that they do that are annoying and easily help them, that's what we are trying to generate towards all others, as much as you can, and see how your attitude shifts. I have a friend, she studies this as well, and she said she was on an airplane and somebody was pushing their seat back, and she was like, oh, getting really annoyed. And then she suddenly remembered that when her daughter does that, her adult daughter, she never has that feeling. She's just like, yeah, come on back. And, you know, so trying to have that same kind of feeling, it doesn't mean that you don't take care of yourself. So you still have your borders, you still have your boundaries, you still try to understand what's right or wrong, you still have to tell people, oh, stop, I can't, you know, get out of the chair now when you're that far back. Or you still take care of yourself, but you try to do it in the same way that you would if this was somebody you loved as much as fill in the blank, your mother, your daughter, your child, whoever it is. That's the practice, to try and take notes so that when you come back, you know, we'll get into different groups and we can compare notes. And also note any question or kind of like, any questions that come up over the week about why did she say that, or what about this situation or that situation, or some of the other elephants in the room, because being careful, being very careful is very important. And we're going to talk also about what to do when problems arise. So what to do, what do people do when they have a spiritual teacher and then, you know, they need to step back a little bit. What do they do? How do you change your relationship with the sponsor? You know, what do you do so that you're still going to be seeing this person, right? You know, and how do you step away from that? Yeah. Somebody's going to hand you a mic.
I had a question just to understand the intention throughout all of this. So, is it correct in assuming the intention of finding your teacher is that it's a lifetime relationship, or is there room for change or growth in that?
Yes and yes. So it is a lifetime relationship, and it does change. But that's why you have to be so careful, because so kind of the promise that you make to a teacher, and we'll go into this in much greater depth next week, but you kind of make a commitment to a teacher. You make this relationship that if you're looking at it from this bigger long-term karmic connection viewpoint, any of the connections we make with people go on and on and on and on. So you just want to be very careful when you're making that kind of a connection. It doesn't mean you can't have all those other kinds of connections that we just talked about, all those other instructors and people helping you. But when you decide this is the person that you're going to have this very special connection with, then we'll talk about, well, how do you kind of step back from that without disturbing your mind about this person? You know, that's what's most important, that you don't start seeing this person negatively. And, you know, there's a saying that says incense smells better from a distance. So that's also meant about the teacher. You know, if you're really right up close to that teacher, you're going to see all kinds of things that might not fit with this other view that you're trying to hold. That's why it's so easy, like I'm saying, to do that with somebody at a distance, like the Dalai Lama, who I'm not going to see all these other things, right? There's still ways, even when you're very skilled at this practice, and then you see some flaw, there's still ways to work with your mind so that it doesn't disturb your view. But you want to do that carefully and not get into a situation where you feel manipulated or exploited or any of those other negative things that have happened. There's ways to back away. So you always have the ability to say, if a teacher asks you to do something, say, no, I'm not going to do that. that's you know, or I'm going to check. You know, and a good teacher is always telling you, check it out, decide. I know people will go to Geshe and ask him, you know, for advice on what kind of job they should take or where should they go. And, you know, he's very careful not to tell anybody to do something that they might. He's very familiar with the Western mind, but in a different kind of setting, maybe one of his Tibetan students might go to him and ask him what to do, and then they would be expected to do that. You know, where should I go live? You should go live there. That's it. You asked me, I told you. Why would you do anything else? But with us, he's kind of used to like, oh, now I've decided something else, and now I've decided to do this, and well, I don't think I'm going to do that at all. So that's why he's very careful with us to take these kind of slow steps. But and it's also, you have to be careful what you ask. So like when Lama Zopa Rinpoche would come here and people would ask him for a practice, they don't know what they're getting into. He's like, okay, 5 million of those, then you need to go to India and do this, and then you need, and you know, maybe it's going to take 5 lifetimes to do those things that he's telling people to do. But don't ask if you don't want to hear an answer like that, you know. So I guess my larger point is incense smells better from a distance, and we can take baby steps in practicing lots of different things. We're still getting huge benefits from the fact that we are alive at the same time that some of these teachers that we've talked about are alive. We can still develop that kind of devotion and connection to them by how we put a dollar in that bowl, how we listen to the teachings, even if it's online, how, you know, how seriously we take that. I mean, I remember being in a teaching, the very first teaching I ever went to that the Dalai Lama gave. I remember I had this burning question, and I mean, I didn't ask him, but he addressed it, and I felt like it was meant right for me. That's perfect. That's exactly the right kind of attitude to have. I felt like, wow, I just got my answer. And developing that view then is what's important. It's coming from my side. Does that make sense? So we can work with our side. So the last little story I'll give you, I mean, because you're all familiar with this, growing up in this country. So it's kind of like two gears coming together. We can work on our side and clean our stuff up enough, and then you have to make sure the teacher that you're meeting has the right gears that then it just is pulling you forward. So the story in the Bible where Jesus is walking, I mean, I don't know the Bible very well, so excuse me if I get it wrong, but the idea is the same. Jesus is walking and somebody touches his robe and they're healed, right? And Jesus can feel that. And then he says something like, who touched my robe? And this man who then became healed said, I did. And he said, you healed me. And he said, no, your faith healed you. So it came from both sides. If he touched the person who was standing next to him, his robe, he might not have been healed. That man had generated that kind of faith that when he touched Jesus' robe, he was healed. It came from both sides. Somebody else walking next to Jesus wants to kill him. And if he touches his robe, nothing's going to happen, right? So that's a really important thing to remember. That's a really important thing to remember. How much is coming from your side? How much is coming from that side? The qualifications there that you need to be really sure are solid. And the side that you can work on. Okay? All right, so let's just take a minute to get back in your meditative posture and close your eyes for a second. Take a few deep breaths. Think about how fortunate it is to have been born in the life that you have. In this situation that you're in, the circumstances that have allowed you to have the time to study, the abilities to read and think clearly, all the people that have supported and guided you along the way. The fact that you live in the area where there is a facility like this, a teacher who's come all the way from India, a lifetime of studying to share information and knowledge with you. All the factors that had to come together just perfectly lined up. What an amazing thing your mind is. What a
what amazing potential it has. If you have the capacity to be patient for a minute, that capacity can grow to 10 minutes, to an hour, to a year. That all of the potential that you have can expand and grow limitlessly. At the end, and you know, we started with setting an intention. So, and then Buddhism, it's very important to have bookends, you know, of our practice, of our day. But certainly, for this hour and a half we've been together, we started by setting our intention, our motivation, and then at the end, we take a minute to think about the merit that we have collected by getting here, by practicing, by thinking, by talking, by sharing. That they're like seeds, karmic seeds that you've created through your actions of body, speech, and mind. And like seeds, they're not going to be dormant forever. And a dedication means deciding where you want those seeds to ripen. You want them to ripen so that all the obstacles to between you and complete enlightenment are dissolved. That's wonderful. You can also think smaller. You wish to have more understanding, more generosity. You want to include other people who are, you know, who are needing some help right now. You can dedicate your merit towards them. And thank you all for coming, and I appreciate all your time and attention. See you next week.
Thank you, Steve. I wanted to make one last announcement. We are going to have discussion group after each class for about a half hour or so, if you'd like to stick around and talk about some of the ideas that were presented tonight. To entice you tonight, we have cake. We have some cake left over from a celebration yesterday, so please at least help us see the last of the cake. Thank you.